two things since the announcement's been made. Terry and Loopy were here this morning, but Loopy was not feeling good, so Terry had to take her home this morning. That's why they're not in their normal little seat down here up front. We need to keep Loopy in our prayers. And I discovered that Nancy Quinlan has an infection that is clearing up, but they had to admit her to the hospital to do some of the procedures they needed. She is Banner South, but Jerry said she is doing some better on that. Keep Nancy and Jerry in your prayers also, if you will. I have an enigma that I don't know what to do with. One of those problems preachers face. A couple months ago, talking with so many friends on the internet and getting emails and answering phone calls, I began realizing that you and I are living in a strange country, in a strange world. The old song, "This World Is Not My Home," begins to take on new meaning. The old song, "I Am a Pilgrim Here," begins to take on a new meaning. Within the last 20 years, I live in a country that I'm feeling very uncomfortable with the way that people think and the way that people act. And the problem that I face on this is that y'all have given me a great privilege, allowing me to spend my days reading and studying and meditating and writing and thinking and teaching. And I have been, for the last 2 months, trying to put together a series of lessons that will help us as individuals simply continue to live faithful unto God in a world that sees us as the enemy, that sees us as out of step. Old fuddy-duddy was a word that was used. The problem that I always face and have for many years, and I don't know that we're going to solve this, but I'm just going to be blunt with you this morning. I'm going to put it on the tape. I've been preaching these lessons on Sunday morning for our Bible class, and I've been teaching a different lesson on the same subject for our morning service. I have been enlarging upon that on Sunday night for our evening service. And we've had some very, very good discussions in our Wednesday night Bible class on how we can deal with our neighbors and with our work and with our government and with what we're facing this world. And part of my problem is I want all of you to engage in all of these studies. I think they're that important. I think they are helpful. And I recognize, as I stood and talked with Brother Meckling this morning, that I know he's facing so many problems, and Terry and Loopy had to go home this morning, and many of you have long-term illnesses you're dealing with. But one of the things that we're trying to do is that all of our worship together does two things. More than that, but two things I want you to think about. Number one, it glorifies God. Both in our Bible classes and our Wednesday nights and our Sunday nights, we gather together, and the purpose of doing that is that we can publicly proclaim our faith and our trust in God and glorify God. And this is one of the ways that we are allowed to show unto the world our faith. And the second thing it does is that it allows us to grow in our knowledge, in our understanding, and in our confidence in our faith. And there's nothing that can substitute for that. Now, for the lesson that I really want to talk about. But I just want you to know, when you're not here, I notice that. When you're not here, it makes me question my value, my worth, my ability. And it does get noticed by the world. When I tell the world that God means the most to me of anything in the world, there's absolutely nothing in this world that is greater in my life than God. And I'm going to tell you what, y'all are going to call me a hypocrite if I don't show that. And you would be right. If in my daily walk you see that I never think about God and I never talk about God and I never exhibit any evidence that God actually has affected my life in any way, what's going to happen is the people are going to realize God doesn't mean everything. This is the greatest commandment. Love God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to simply allow all of us to grow. So I'm going to challenge you. If you don't come to our Bible studies because you get nothing out of the Bible studies, I need to know that. You need to let the elders know about the teaching here. If there are subjects that you need to study, I'll be glad to talk about it. If I don't know the answers, we will invite somebody to come and spend a week with us that does have answers on these points. But friends, we are a family. And we are together facing a problem with the world. Now, turn with me to the book of Ephesians, chapter 4. This was from our study Wednesday night. The book of Ephesians is divided into two sections. The first part of Ephesians, the Apostle Paul talks about what God has done for us and how we now are in Jesus Christ and have been blessed with all spiritual blessings in the heavenly places, Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 3. But having these blessings of God also entail obligations for us as God's people. And in verse 17 through verse 24, the Apostle Paul summarizes what is the demand of your life, what you need to do in relationship and response to Jesus. And he says, "This I say therefore, and I affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer as the Gentiles also walk, in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity and greediness. But you did not learn Christ in that way. If indeed you have heard of Him, you have been taught in Him, as truth is in Jesus, that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lusts of the deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and you put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of the truth." This lesson, I think, is at the core of what God expects out of you as a Christian. It's going to be absolutely, I believe, fundamental to your success at walking with God as God wants you to walk. Now, we face a problem today, and this is what I was talking about, and that is we're in a discussion, a continual discussion,
about morals and ethics. We have this news and we see it discussed. It's discussed in our books. It's discussed on the internet. It is discussed everywhere we go and everything that we do. We're trying to figure out what is right, what is wrong. So, who are the grand deciders of that which is right and that which is wrong? And I'm going to tell you, the problem that I see in our country is we've turned that over to the wrong people. The entertainers and the entertainment is that which is portraying that which is acceptable and that which is right. Our TV shows show that which is acceptable and that which is right. Well, at least their version of it. When we talk about morals and ethics, we end up watching the news. And the news does not just report events. I wish they did, but they do not. And they then begin to pontificate on that which is wrong and that which is immoral and that which is ungodly and that which is intolerable. And so they become the preachers of ethics and morals for our country. When we turn to science, we have science that is what some people call hard science, and that is they put two things in a test tube and they see what blows up. And then we have what I call soft science, the social sciences. And we decide how people can be normal. And what is normal? And what is not normal? And what is that which is psychologically wrong and needs to have psychological help in determining? And so we've turned over right and wrong to the soft sciences on telling us how we ought to think and how we ought to live. Along with that, we have our politicians. Some of them brazen enough to say, if you believe that, you need to change your religion. And that can be about abortion, that can be about euthanasia, that can be about any moral choice that we want. And so the politicians now have become the spokesmen, the teachers, the deciders of that which is right and that which is wrong. And then political correctness. A statement that is made often in the news is that they will announce something and then they will tell you, and that person is going to find themselves on the wrong side of history. Well, that all depends. How long are you willing to let history go? Are you going to include the final day of judgment? Or are you just going to count the next 5 years? And the problem comes is, we then, by talking about political correctness, let's just vote on morals. And the majority wins. If we can just change the mind of people on a particular moral issue, then it no longer becomes an immoral issue. We've decreed, we've decided, this is right. We are in a struggle. And friend, you're not out of this struggle. You have to decide this. Raising your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, living next to your neighbor, deciding what you will do for taxes, deciding who you will or will not vote on, deciding all of these issues of life, they involve what we consider to be right and wrong in morals and with ethics. And so we must begin figuring this out. And so part of the problem comes, the Apostle Paul here talks about the ways of the Gentiles. I found it a fascinating list, and we went through each word on Wednesday night, which I'm going to shorten to this morning, because I'm supposed to preach 20 minutes, not 45. But their way of thinking is futile. That word futile was the word that was used back in the book of Ecclesiastes. When they translated Ecclesiastes into Greek, they used the Greek word that was translated here in our text. I just find that fascinating. Vanity of vanity. All
is vanity, and that is the same word. And what it means is that in the final analysis, their way of thinking doesn't matter. Doesn't solve it. Doesn't answer it. Doesn't give you the answer of eternal life. But that is what they think. And they think it with all of their heart. He talked about they were darkened in their understanding. He said in verse 18, because they were ignorant of that which is really right and that which is really wrong. And that became the hardening of their hearts. Because they were trying to answer things according to how they felt about it. Years ago, there was a country western song. How can it be wrong when it feels so right? And I got where every time they played that on the radio, I just turned it off. You know what? I know the answer to that. God said so. It's wrong. But it feels so right. Your feelings need to be adjusted. You need the great physician. He said, the problem is sensuality, continual lust. I read out of the New American Standard, and they put the word sensuality in there. And I'm going to tell you, what do you see when you turn on the television? What do you see when they announce a new TV series? What do you see when they're advertising a new movie? What do you see when you see the new books that are popular on the New York Reader's List? What do you see? And the answer is sensuality, sensuality, sensuality. You can't sell soap without sex. And so everything that revolves around now, even the decisions that are demanding the time of our Supreme Court and the attention of our politicians, it's centering back around sensuality. Until finally we're just flooded. And deceitful desires. Because the desires promise you something they can't give. The desires are for things you don't really need, but the desire is there and saying, you need this, you need this. And the problem comes is when you're thinking this way and trying to decide what's right and wrong, it ends up being wrong. But they think they're right. Been there, done that. I mentioned Wednesday night when I was in college, I had everything figured out. I knew Christians were nuts. I knew that my psychology teacher knew far more than any gospel preacher would ever know about life, about right and wrong. And I finally knew that my mom and dad were just clueless. That all the things that they had told me about right and wrong were simply wrong. I knew everything. And I'm going to tell you what. This list that you're seeing up there, it tells you I was futile, I was ignorant, I was darkened, I didn't know what I was talking about, but I thought I did. And so we struggle with this. They've given themselves over to sensuality to practice every kind of impurity and greed. And I just want you to look at what our entertainment does today. Take a look at what our TV does. Take a look at our writings. Take a look at our conversations. Where are we going in this country? And the answer is, these are the problems that we're facing. I get tired of it. I said last week, the greatest invention in the world to me is the mute button. Actually, it's the second greatest. I think the greatest is the off button. But be that as it may, we don't use it. And so we watch and we listen and we read and we become corrupt in our thinking. We begin questioning our morals. We begin questioning what is right. We begin questioning where we've done. But Paul said, that was the old way. But if you've learned anything about Jesus and about Christianity and about the Bible and about God, Paul says, you didn't learn that. Because you didn't learn Jesus. And when we begin learning Jesus, we begin to learn that there's a whole nother way
about this. And so, the Apostle Paul, in this section, he introduces what he's going to do with the rest of the three chapters, chapter 4 and 5 and 6 of Ephesians. He's going to talk about the old way, that's what you used to be. But you got to put that off, and what now has to happen is you got to come over here and you got to live a different way. You're going to be different. The way you talk, the way you act, the way you think, it's going to be a different you. You all didn't know me before I became a Christian. I didn't like me. Well, let me rephrase that. I don't like what I used to be. It was just wrong. Wrong-headed. Wrong thoughts. Wrong actions. Wrong friends. Wrong... There wasn't much that was right. What changes? Most of you have only known me in the role of a Christian. But there was an old man. There was a prior. There was something that was there. What in the world has to change? And what the Apostle Paul says has to change is that there has to be a changing of how we think. If we're ever going to change how we act, we have to change how we think. There's an Old Testament verse that we only quote half of, and that half is correct. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. Now, Jesus used a very similar statement. He said, "For out of the heart comes the issues of life." Now, if out of your heart you be finding murder and adultery and sensuality and lying, stealing, what that tells you is you got a bad heart. I always like it when somebody's been arrested because they've murdered 14 people and stole the money, and the mother is interviewed and she says, "But down deep, he's a good." Mama? He's not. Down deep, he's not a good person. In his heart, he's now spoken by his actions. He's shown us how he thinks in his heart. So we need to then begin changing. And the reason we need to begin changing is back to our list again. Did you all notice this? The Apostle Paul doesn't talk about the sin, that is, the action. Because behind the sin is the way you think. Behind the rebellion to God is the way you think. Behind the ungodliness, the drunkenness, and the immodesty, and the immorality is the way we think. Those are the products of a bad heart. Those are the things that issue forth from inside a man, said Jesus. So if we're going to change from the old man and we're going to end up over here with a new man, what we have to do is figure out and to learn how to think differently. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of chapter 4 for you, but I'm going to challenge you to read it. Because it's going to tell you, if you've been lying, quit. If you have a problem with stealing, quit. If you have a problem with murder, quit. If you have a problem with anger, wrath. If you have a problem with your tongue, you like to gossip about people. The answer is the same every single verse. Quit! And so I've watched as Christians, when they're converted, they find these passages, and they're great passages, and they tell us what the product of our life is supposed to look like or what it's not supposed to look like. And so we make a little list. And all these things are the things I'm not going to do or the things that I am going to do. And now I have a great list. Then what do you do with it? You struggle. And you struggle. And you get despondent. You get discouraged. Why? Because the list really shows us the perfection of what God expects us to be. And God made that list extremely high because we're His people. But the way that we change is not just making the list and trying not to do that. The way we begin changing the heart is begin changing the very way that we think. We begin changing our thought pattern. We begin changing to think like Christ. And when we begin changing that, the changes in the actions almost become automatic. We'll have problems to the day we die, but I'm going to tell you, I stand amazed sometimes at what people that call themselves Christians will do. Really? You say that you love God with all of your heart and you will do that? You say that you put away the old life, repented, and you'll do that? The problem is, they haven't changed their way of thinking yet. They're struggling with changing the actions. I mentioned Wednesday night. When I moved here, there was a lady. You've heard me talk about her before if you've been here for a while. Because what she wanted to do was she wanted to do all the things that God told her not to do. She wanted to be worldly. She desired to be worldly. She found enjoyment in being worldly. And yet, her mom and daddy had raised her in such a way that she knew, if I do that, I'm going to be wrong with God. And so she then didn't do what she wanted to do. And instead, she came to church. And she read her Bible. But she didn't really want to do that. She was afraid not to, but she didn't really want to do that. And you see her problem? At least my estimate, she had just enough religion to be miserable. But not enough love of God in her heart, not enough way of changing of her thinking. And so what was happening is she wanted to go. And there's where the problem is. I was talking with a fellow one time and he had a particular problem that he was trying to quit and he wasn't successful at it at all. I mean, at all. And so he looked at me and he said, "Why do I keep doing this?" Duh. Because you want to. He didn't have the courage to admit what he really wanted in life. And so he's trying to change, but he kept wanting to do it. And as long as you want to do that, it's going to be in your life. I think it was Brother D. Bowman that preached a sermon similar to this. And what he said was, what you need to do is change your wanter. When you finally learn to not want that, then it's easy to quit. When you finally have learned, I don't like that, it's easy to quit. When you find out that you are totally in love with God and righteousness and holiness, and that's going to become your life, it becomes easy to come to service. It becomes easy to pray. It becomes easy because that's where our desire is. Where I think we're struggling, folks, is we want to keep one foot in the world and still be right with God. And we must change the way we think. We must change our desires. And until we can change the desires, we're just going to struggle with these things. But we need to overcome. How do I begin changing the way I think? You can't. Thoughts just pop up in your head. They're like popcorn. It just... Y'all realize that's not true? For example, I want you all to clear your mind just now and do not think about pink elephants. Whatever you do, don't try to picture a pink elephant. Whatever's going through your mind, I want you to think about God and righteousness. Don't think about pink elephants. You know what y'all thinking about? How come? Because what we hear, what we read, what we see, what we participate in, what we talk about, they change our thinking. And we can't totally ever undo the bad thoughts that have been there. We can't undo the conversations. We can't undo the movies and the books. We can't undo that. What we can do is we can overdo those things. And we begin replacing those with other things. If you have your Bible, turn to Philippians chapter 4. Verse 8. Finally, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellent, if there is anything worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. If you feed your mind good material, good principles, good thoughts, good pictures. If you feed your mind, it will produce good thoughts. But I want you to read this again. Brethren, whatever is false, whatever is dishonorable, whatever is wrong, whatever is impure, whatever is disgustingly unloving, whatever is irreputable, think on these things. Go watch a movie. Turn on the TV set and watch The Mistress. Pick up a book and read 50 Shades of Grey. And I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. You're feeding your mind. You're putting into your mind a way of thinking, and it will produce in you thoughts that God does not want us to have. I remember hearing my mom and dad talk about Gone with the Wind. Classic, classic movie, according to everybody. The one line that everybody memorized is that which got talked about. Frankly, my dear. And they used the word damn. Wow. I wished I could find a movie that used one word one time. That's not really all that objection. You see the problem we have? Your thinking is different than your grandparents' thinking about movies. Your thinking about language is different than your great-grandparents thought about language. your differences about morals, what is acceptable and what is unacceptable, is different than most people in 1990. Because we have changed the way we think in our country. And not for the better. So how in the world can I change that? Be involved in Bible study. Be involved in worship of God. Put into your life as many opportunities as you can to feed the mind with that which is good and pure and wholesome and right. And that is worship of God, Bible study, singing psalms, praying together as God's people. God created the church because we need it. God put us together because we need it. The essence of the word church is assembly. Now, you all can fuss with me about the Greek word, and I'll be glad to fuss with you about it. But the bottom line, what it's talking about is no man is a church by himself. It involves us. It involves you and me interacting with one another. And we are part of the church. And if you're part of this church, you need to be part of the church. It needs to be here to help us, to help our thinking. One of the things that I find fascinating is having an open discussion about why we think what we think and able to compare it with what God said. And that's what we're trying to do. Now, if you don't change your thinking, we're going to fail. If you don't have our thinking right, you're going to have to wrestle with all of the morals and ethics, and you're going to lose. I've heard some of our young people say, well, I don't see anything wrong with it. Really? Well, let me tell you. I don't see anything wrong with two people just moving in together and living as if they're married. Doesn't hurt anybody. I don't see anything wrong with not bothering to move in, just hooking up. Doesn't hurt anybody. The writer of Hebrews says, the marriage bed is undefiled. And to be held in honor among all people, but adulterers and fornicators, God will condemn. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7, to avoid fornication, let each one have his own wife, and each wife her own husband, and do not defraud one another of the sexual activity within that relationship. How do I avoid fornication and being condemned of God? You get married and you stay married and you are married the way God would have you be married. You old fuddy-duddy. You're so out of step. You don't understand what marriage is. You don't understand what sex is. You don't. And I'm going to tell you what. I think God understands it all. And God said. And that should end the discussion for godly people. How's your thinking? What are you feeding your thoughts? What are you feeding on? We need these types of discussions. We need to be together. We need more opportunity to feed the mind that which is good and whole and pure and wholesome and godly. Now, if you're here this morning, don't be of the world. You need to change. If you've been living like the world, join the club. We've all been there. The difference is, we can't go back there. We can't be like that anymore. For God has called us to holiness and righteousness and purity. And we're going to stand out in a world of sensuality and impurity and immorality. Okay. At least we stand out. But let's stand for what God would have. Jesus will accept you. Jesus will forgive. And then what you can do is you can join with us and change your way of thinking and become godly influences in the community. If you're willing and able to do that, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.